by the time I hit 40, if life doesn't change for me, I'm out. Like, I'm done. I have a plan and everything.
Hey there, my name is Sean, and this is Suicide Noted. On this podcast, I talk with suicide attempt survivors so that we can hear their stories. Every year around the world, millions of people try to take their own lives, and we almost never talk about it. We certainly don't talk about it enough, and when we do talk about it, many of us, including me, are not very good at it. So, one of my goals with this podcast is to have more conversations, and hopefully better conversations, with suicide attempt survivors. Why? In part, to help more people in more places feel a little less shitty and a little less alone. So if you've been a part of this podcast in any way, thank you. Now, if you are a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. Hello at suicidenoted.com on Facebook or Twitter /X at suicidenoted. And there are more reasons to reach out beyond being a guest. And no, I'm not asking you to pay me all kinds of compliments. Please reach out if you are a former guest who would like to join us for an update episode. Please reach out if you have a question you would like me or a guest or one of our members to answer. And please reach out if you've got something you'd like to share, but you don't want to be on the podcast. I'd like to read it out loud, of course, with your permission. You can check the show notes to learn more about the podcast, including our membership. And as always, you can rate and review this podcast on Apple. It helps if you only say nice things, of course. And you can leave a comment on Spotify. Just go down into a particular episode's show notes and it should be real clear on how to do that. We really appreciate your feedback, your thoughts, your comments, your questions, your ideas, all that good stuff. Finally, we are talking about suicide on this podcast, and we don't hold back. So please take that into account before you listen or as you listen. But I do hope you listen because there is so much to learn. Today, I am talking with Kristen. Kristen lives in North Carolina, and she is a suicide attempt survivor. Hey, Kristen. Kristen, you might be the only person so far that I've talked to who direct New York to North Carolina link, like me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My parents had moved down right after the Trade Center. They were like literally in the Trade Center. My dad's floor was the floor that they hit. He had gotten the job like a month before and he was like, I love this floor. It's absolutely amazing. You know, it's a little scary being up this high. He saw his friend on the ferry. They got a cup of coffee. And if he didn't stop for that cup of coffee, he would have been in the building when the plane hit. It was a rough thing. So we stayed in New York for about 6 months. And then my mom had gotten offered a job in Charlotte, where I live now. And then they moved. I stayed because I was still in college and we did the whole thing. So
got yeah. It. Well, thanks for joining me here and talking.
Absolutely.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte. Yeah. Yeah.
From New York.
From New York, from Staten Island.
I was going to guess it.
The born in Brooklyn, the raised in Staten Island thing, you know, stereotypical. And
you have not lost the accent.
You know what? I feel like I have. I don't hear it as much. Like, oh, where are you from? You know, I don't hear it that much anymore.
Cool. Well, here's what we're going to do. But like, yeah, we'll have fun with it.
Okay.
Anyone who's listening, can you please message me and then I can share it with
yeah.
Kristen, do you hear a New York accent? If they might say, yeah or no, I'm going to guess. I'm pretty sure I know what they're going to say. I like the accent. I think it's kind of cool. It reminds me, I was actually born on Long Island and raised there, and I lived in the city for like 11 or whatever years, but it's a unique sound and I like it.
I mean, I like it on men. I think on women, it comes off a little mob wives, kind of rough around the edges, you know? I mean, I love my accent. I don't ever want to lose it. So,
yeah. It's just Staten Island in particular.
Staten Island has a very heavy accent, very heavy.
I don't want to be a snob about it, but if you're not from that area, you might not kind of get it. But, you know, that's because you're not from there. But
right.
This is me speaking to the people who might be listening to us talk. Yeah, Staten Island's part of New York City, but it's sort of, is it fair for me to say it's a little bit of the redheaded stepchild?
It is. Staten Island is a world of its own.
Yeah.
If you're not like New Yorkers hate Staten Island, like they don't even want to be a part of Staten Island. There's no place like it. You could go to Manhattan. You could go to Brooklyn. You go to the Bronx. It's not Staten Island. Unless you know it, you just don't get it. Like,
No.
People like, I watch The Sopranos. And no, you just don't get it. It's like it's a way of life. And there's no other place you'll ever fit in, I think. I mean, personally. You know, I get Jersey a lot. I get Long Island. I get Boston, which I don't understand at all. But they're North Carolina, so what do they know? But
that's going to be maybe the first thing in the beginning of the show, if I can add.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of hate mail on that one.
Is there a thing about it you miss the most? Number one.
Food. It's got to be the food. Definitely. I found some comparable places, but I mean, we took it for granted that we ate gourmet food, you know, because on the corner, any corner you go into, people are not going to understand my references here, but like a pork store, cold cut store, and you get, you know, a sandwich or rice ball or cannoli, like you just go anywhere you go, you know, bagels, pizza, they're catching up a little bit of attitude. I kind of miss I don't like the phony stuff.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like straightforward.
I've only been talking to you for about 8 minutes and I don't think you're kind of straightforward. I think very straightforward.
I think I'm too straightforward, maybe. Well, I don't know. It could be the Sicilian, it could be the Staten Island, it could be the Italian, it could be the Island. Okay. So I've been here now officially 5 years now, staying like full year. But I was going back and forth. I lived back in New York and New Jersey, Long Island, 5 years here, 5 years there, you know, relationship wise and all that stuff.
So questions, here we go. Why? Curious. Why? Or let me reframe that. How did you find me?
Suicide's a taboo subject, you know, and everyone knows that. And it's one of those things that, like, you want to Google it and you want to see if there's other people out there that experience what you experienced. You know, you're always afraid. I was always afraid to like kind of Google it, or if someone's looking over my shoulder, or you're afraid to tell your psychiatrist. Do you know any groups that would have, you know, it's something that I was like kind of looking for somebody who went through the same experiences. So my brother was talking about podcasts one day and he said, why don't you look up a podcast and see if there's something like that out there for you? And I wound up finding yours and I started listening and I was like, wow, okay, there's people literally all around the world that deal with this. There should be so much more awareness out there for it, you know? And I just think that people take it the wrong way. I think that, you know, they think it's selfish, or they think it's for drama, or they think it's this and that. And I've been listening to your podcast and I was like, I kind of want to tell my story, you know, because it comes in all shapes and sizes. And I mean, I go through suicide. I think about it every single day, you know? It's not something that it's a stereotypical thing where a person's sitting in a room in all black clothes, you know, writing death notes. It's not like that. But that's how I found it. Yeah.
And then you reached out and you said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
A lot of people wouldn't do that, though.
You know, I think they should. I think it's good to have your voice out there. I think more people should come forward, you know? They should, without being judged.
They are going to be judged. You will be judged.
Yeah. I mean, probably, yeah.
Not saying that's fair. It's not going to come from me. I certainly hope it's not coming from our listeners, but...
They say you don't get judged for it, but yeah, I guess there's still that stigma.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like it goes away, but I guess it doesn't, really. Because sometimes I feel like we come far in mental health, and then I think back and I'm like, you know what? You're right. There might be stigma. Because I don't think that way anymore, but I try not to think of it that way.
Right. Nothing like Sean to bring you back to the don't be so damn optimistic. Great. Thanks, Sean.
Well, you know what it is? I think because I feel like if it's a disease that you're born with, there shouldn't be a stigma on that. Like people who are diabetic don't have stigmas. People who have cancer don't have stigmas. That's why I think, because a lot of mine is my mental illness, that it's a disease. I have a disease. So I shouldn't be stigmatized for a disease that I have.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you reached out and I'm glad we're talking.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're open to that. And I know that there are people, maybe especially in New York, I don't know, because they're going to resonate with this quote unquote not strong accent. But who knows? You're right. But it is cool that we do have people listening in a whole bunch of places. So it's nice.
Yeah.
Let's go back. So you have a mental illness.
I do. I have 5 documented mental illnesses. Yeah. I have bipolar 2 disorder, borderline personality disorder, generalized anxiety disorder. I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and I have major depressive disorder. So I'm just, you know, full of it all.
As we speak today, are you on any meds?
I am.
How many different meds?
5.
Kristen's just taking her black fluffy dog and putting him or her outside.
Literally, because they'll be going on for like an hour.
Even if there's a little barking in the background, as long as we can hear you nice and clear, we're good. We're just two people talking. You're in your what, bedroom? I'm in my kitchen.
I'm in my bedroom, but my dogs are, they're the most dramatic. When I'm on the phone or telephone call or anything like that, they go nuts.
So dramatic.
They are. They really are so dramatic.
So five.
Documented mental illnesses. Yeah.
Do you think that those are all accurate, that you do have them?
You know, they all blend into each other. There are some I don't think I have. I had psychiatrists tell me you don't have this, but they're like, we'll keep it on your chart. It's kind of like, I'm not going to fight with 20 other ones that diagnose you with that kind of thing. They also had let me in on a little secret. I don't know if you've been in the hospital per se, but when you're in the hospital, you notice a lot of people have been diagnosed with bipolar. That's one they give a lot of people label with. They do that so the pharmaceutical company, they could prescribe you any type of medication. So if you have borderline personality disorder, there's no medication for it. So they can't give you one. So I've learned that from a professor and a guy who studies this. And he said, that's why a lot of people are bipolar. They could give you all the type of meds on the spectrum. OCD doesn't have a medicine to give, so they can't give you a medicine for it. So think about that for a second. I was like really blown away. Like, I don't think I have bipolar. I've had a couple of psychiatrists tell me you don't have bipolar disorder, you know, so.
It's not a racket, but it feels sometimes like it's kind of a racket.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but it's a business like everything else. You know, I shouldn't say that, but sometimes medicine could be a little bit of a business.
I mean, of course you can say that. You do whatever you want to do, but I think it's more than a little bit. Do you think if you were not on those meds, you'd be dead?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
So in this unique island, which is rather small, if you're wondering out there, do you recall the first time you started to think about suicide?
Do you know, after every one of the episodes I've listened to with you, I have never, when I was a child, had suicidal thoughts at all. They didn't start until my 20s or 30s at all. But I used to think, I used to be afraid of my parents dying for some reason, but I never had suicidal thoughts until I was like 25, 30. So a nurse pointed out to me, she's like, you're a little late to have these thoughts. And I'm like, I never had them. I mean, I think a lot of my disease came out with the move. I think that's what triggered it. And I think that's when the suicidal thoughts start coming, because my life changed drastically.
Not sure the context of the conversation you had with the nurse, but I don't quite understand that comment. But we could also ask the question, you didn't ideate, you didn't think about suicide. Are there, so it's primarily connected to the move and maybe some undiagnosed stuff, which we'll talk about.
Right.
Is there anything, and share as much or little as you want, anything happening upon reflection in your childhood, teenage years, into your 20s, where you're like, that really contributed to this thing I'm dealing with or have been dealing with?
Beside the move, I had emotionally distant parents. We don't talk about feelings. We don't talk about emotions. Everything swept under the rug. My dad's like, I taught you to be tough. There's no crying here. That we didn't grow up like that. Sweet, lovey-dovey, Italian. This is like, no. I taught you, get your ass up and do what you got to do. No crying. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he taught us to be tough. Supposedly, that's a lot of where my borderline comes from. So I think maybe a lot of that was comforting myself when I was a kid, because I used to cry in my room by myself and I never cried in front of my parents. You know, they had their own things going on because they were stressed, you know, in New York. And I just think they grew up that way too, not having loving parents like that. My parents are not the type that'll be lovey-dovey, hug and kiss you. But my dad would be like, you want me to go buy you a tattoo? Let's go get a tattoo. And like, that's his way of showing he loves me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
I'm like,
I get
okay
it.
With it, you know?
No, but, I get it. That makes sense. I love that. I love that image that I'm having right now.
Yeah.
You want to go get a tattoo. Not you want to go get an ice cream. You could have said you want to go get a slice of pizza. I'm sure that came up too, but you chose the tattoo.
Yeah. Or he'll give me just like these random things. Like I want to go pay for like, you know, your eyebrows to get done or something. I'm like, all right, let's do it. If that's your way to show him love, I'll take it, you know?
Anywhere we can get it, of course. Do you have any siblings, Kristen?
I have one brother. He's younger. He's not affected by this at all. He lives a normal, moved in with his girlfriend's, got a full-time job. He's detached from all of it. My situation now, unfortunately, is a lot of my suicidal thoughts now come from my circumstances right now, because I'm not in the best ones right now. I know for a fact.
So you went from suicide, not even really considering it at all. And at some point in your, you said maybe late 20s, early 30s, you start to think about it. And now you think about it every day. That's what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Ideation every day.
Do you remember? Because I think it's a big thing to start to think about suicide, regardless of what age you are. So I realize some people can't pinpoint an exact moment. You might be able to. Like, do you remember that? Even though I know you weren't a kid.
The first time I thought about it is when I was like a teenager. So yeah, I do remember it. I remember being really stressed at work, not getting along with my coworkers, and being in the break room. And all of a sudden, there's something washed over me. And I was like, I just don't want to live anymore. Like, there was something there. I was like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I just remember going home and just hysterical crying and being like, I don't want to live. I guess the stress, maybe everything just came down on me and just something happened. And I just was like, I don't want to do this anymore. This was when I was like 24-ish.
Okay, not a teen, 20. So when you went home to cry, were you living with your parents?
I was, yeah, I was. I still do.
Did you cry in front of your parents?
Absolutely. They saw me cry. When they hear suicide, they're like, stop, I don't want to hear it. And they walk out of the room. It's not something I could talk about with them. You know, I don't think they think that I would ever attempt it. I really don't. I don't think they think it's that serious, where I don't think they realize that I just turned 39. Mm-hmm. I tell my psychiatrist every single day, by the time I hit 40, if life doesn't change for me, like, I'm out, like, I'm done. I have a plan and everything. Like, and she can't say anything. She can't put me in the hospital. So I'm hoping that it changes, that life changes, because feelings change and life changes. Something could happen in 6 months that could be the best year of my life, you know, but I think like that.
What do you mean she can't put you in the hospital?
Because I don't technically have a plan. So if you don't have a plan, they can't. You could say, I want to commit suicide every single day. But if you don't have a plan, they can't put you in the hospital.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I believe you. I just have had some different experiences. So I got it. 20s, work. So that's 15 years ago. How do we summarize those 15 years?
Total ups and downs. There were good times. There were times, like I said, after that, I went straight to a doctor, got to a psychiatrist, got put in the hospital.
This is when you were referencing crying in the break room or not wanting to live. You go to a doctor, you're seeing a therapist, and you got meds, and you went to a hospital.
Well, no, at first I went to go see a general practitioner.
Okay.
He said, okay, go see this doctor. I'll send you over to her. She's a psychiatrist. I went to go see her. I told her about this. This was all new to me. So I didn't realize when you tell them that, they're like, you're not leaving my office. The ambulance is coming. Like, I was like, what? Like,
shocking.
I was like, everybody gets like, feels like that, don't they, at some time? And she's like, no, you're going to the hospital. So she sent me to the hospital.
But you just said earlier, I'm not trying to fuck around with you here, but didn't you just say like 4 minutes ago, you have to have a plan for them to send you to the hospital?
Well, I basically told her, I was like, I don't want to live and I will do anything in my power. I was like, I have pills at home. Okay. Well, then you're a danger to yourself, basically. So,
How long did you stay in the hospital?
I was there 14 days.
Where was this?
Charlotte. This was Charlotte.
Bonus points for anyone out there. Please message me if you know the nickname of Charlotte. I'm not giving it away.
Okay. I'm not going to either. So,
yeah. Let's just say if you're familiar with the boroughs of New York, that could be a good hint.
Yes. That's a very good hint.
Mm-hmm. We always got to bring it back to New York, Kristen. So, I know also people are probably also wondering this because that's why they want to hear the Suicide Noted Podcast. Kristen and I are probably like 2.5 hours away from each other.
Yeah, I'd say.
So you're in the hospital for 14 days. Does it help at all?
It does. Actually, it does. I was afraid because I'm like, God knows who my roommate's going to be. You know, everybody gets scared. You know, who knows if people are violent? You know, that's a scary situation. Just they cavity search you. I don't know if they did that to you in the hospital. They literally stripped me down and they searched me all over. Actually, when I was leaving after those 12 days, 14 days, when I was leaving, I actually was like scared to leave because I felt like this security blanket. You know what I mean? I was actually scared. She's like, well, we stabilize you. And then it's your choice to go and, you know, figure it out yourself, you know. And I had a pretty good experience. I can't lie. It wasn't bad.
Great. Yeah. And then you leave. You just go home?
You just go home. That's it. Yeah. You just go home. And you just start your life again. I got home and I was feeling so much better, you know. And then, you know, I was just getting the job again, doing everything. Life was back to normal, take my medication. And then, of course, It's what everybody else does, which is the one number thing they say don't do. When you feel good, do not stop taking your medication, because you will end up right back here. Because the reason that's why you feel good is because of your medication.
Yeah, and what the medication might allow you to do that you can't do off of it, like exercise more or whatever it might be. Do you remember about when you stopped taking the medication and it went south?
About 6 months later.
And did you lie to your therapist about that?
Kind of, yeah, I did. I did. And of course, she's like, okay, we'll try something new. And then I tried something new. And then the first, you know, in the beginning, you know, they're rough. I was like, I don't want to take these. I was like, I don't want to take these for the rest of my life. I don't want to be dependent on it, you know? So I thought I was like better. I was like, I can fight this. You know, I can fight. I don't need meds. And then sure enough, here goes Kristen back to the hospital.
So you went to the hospital number two.
Number two, different hospital. It's whatever bed they have open.
Yeah.
So the second hospital was 5 days they kept me. And that one was a little bit scary. I'll be honest. They sent me all the way to Hickory, which is like 45 minutes away. But from Charlotte to Hickory is a little rough, if you know what I mean.
it's just there's a different vibe there.
I'm suggesting like banjo music type vibe. So I was like, there and I'm like, okay, this is kind of scary. The building was scary, like everything was like, okay, I'm not used to this. But it stabilized me, so I can't say too much bad about it, I guess.
You went there by choice?
No, I never went by choice. All my hospital stays. And I have three of them, but I've never went by choice.
So the second one, doctor sent you.
Doctor sent me again.
Yeah. 5 days, come out.
Then I stay good like that for a good like 7-8 years. I was good.
Wow.
Really good. Yeah, I was good. I was keeping up with everything, exercising, going out, having friends.
In all that time, two hospital stays, probably a fair amount of ideating.
Yeah.
You haven't actually attempted, correct, at that point?
No, not really. It was more like ideation, like, okay, this is what, if I was going to do it, this is how I would do it.
But yeah. When you would think about it before that third time, like, was it always the same method?
Yeah, always the same. Yeah. And I try to do a lot of research and all that. I know that pills are really one of the worst methods you could do. First of all, a lot of them half the time do not work. Mm. Second time, I know people throw up. And a lot of the times what happens with that is that my biggest fear is a suicide failure.
Sure.
Like, God forbid you try to commit suicide and you fail. That's scary. That could be, that's even worse than a suicide. I mean, that's bad. Pills would be it. Pills, but a tweak to it. I don't know. I'm not going to say because I don't want to give any ideas.
Where'd you learn about it?
This was Nip Tuck. It's a pretty intense show. It's about plastic surgeons, but it's like really like triple X kind of thing. I saw it in the show. She had cancer.
Wait. If Nip Tuck can talk about it, why the fuck can't I?
Then go ahead. Talk about it. I mean, if you feel comfortable.
If Nip Tuck, which is available on like Netflix.
Yeah, it's on FX. It's on cable TV, literally.
Can talk about the details of a suicidal method.
Yes.
Surely the Suicide Noted podcast.
Yes.
Can as well.
Yes.
Although the network or however that works probably has an amazing lawyer and I don't.
I can only imagine, because to show that scene, I would never thought of that myself. Not like that's something you should think about, but I would have never thought of something like that. And I was like shocked they even showed that.
Let me ask you a question. I'm curious. So when things are getting really rough and you're like, I'm out, I can't deal with this anymore, I'm too tired. Like, why choose a method that is more likely to not work?
You know what? I think it was a cry for help mostly. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they say when you do suicide, you don't really want to die. You just want the pain to end. It was a cry for help, and I didn't know how to get help at that point, you know, because I've never had it before. I never had anyone in my family have it, or like, I didn't know where to even go first.
I've had these conversations, and I think just based on those, that's really all I can talk about from those. It's interesting when I've asked people about a past attempt.
Yeah.
And they'll say things like, I wish it had worked, or I really did want to die. Like, I don't always think it's just a cry for help or even just, quote, wanting the pain to go away. I actually think not a tiny percentage of people absolutely want to die.
I don't think I ever really did. I think it was always just cries for help. I really do. It's almost like a situation like, if it worked, I'd be okay with it too. Like, I'm not afraid of dying. So does that make sense? Maybe like if it worked, I would be okay.
Yeah.
The pain would be away. But it's such a permanent decision that, like, the third, like, we'll get to it. Like you said, third time, I really did want to be gone. But the first two times, I think, was just a cry for help.
So that makes me think, when you say a cry for help, that there was no help for you.
Right. I didn't know where to go. You know, I would go to my general practitioner. She gave me antidepressants. And I would, like, after a couple of months, I would just stop taking them, and then back to square one again, you know, back to square one. And she was like, do you ever think maybe you have bipolar? You should go. And I couldn't afford a psychiatrist. So I'm like, all right, so what do I do? Keep coming here? Like, I had no way out. Like, I didn't know about hospitalizations, you know, I didn't know about that stuff. So it's nothing I ever thought about, because I never had these feelings before. So this was all new to me.
Yeah. And you know? No one around you knew enough to share more about it.
Right. Nobody helped.
What's interesting is this is, and people might in more like less urban areas might be annoyed at my comment here, but you're in a fairly urban area. There are a lot of doctors. There are some resources. There are things that your general practitioner or others could have rather easily at least pointed you in the right direction. So whatever that, it's not to blame anybody. It's just just an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. They failed me, I think, in that sense, I think. But at the same time, you know, a general practitioner, I don't think is equipped for that. You know, she doesn't know. So she's like, all right, and I can't afford it. So like, okay, so what do? You know, like, I just stayed on antidepressants. Then there were times for like a couple months, I was off antidepressants for like 6 months and I was fine. Some triggered it and then back to square, you know, it just kept going on. And it was just like a never ending cycle.
Was there anything like externally or perhaps internally that would tend to trigger it?
It was a relationship breakup. Yeah, that triggered it. And the move triggered it too. So
do you think 9/11 has anything to do with it?
A psychologist mentioned that. She said, you know, that's trauma that you haven't really gone through. She's like, you never worked through that. And I was like, you know, 9/11 happened and my parents literally were in it. And I was in high school. And I remember walking home that day, seeing the flames, walking to my aunt's house. And like, it didn't, I never got like realizing that my father was like 2 seconds away from dying. It just, we never talked about it ever again. Like, nobody in this house talked about it. And my dad saw his boss jump out the window. I mean, that was his floor, literally. My parents literally were like right there. That was my dad's floor. My mom worked right down the block, like two like buildings away. So they couldn't get in touch with each other. So they were like in the rubble running, finding each other. Then they found each other. Then they wound up crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. They went to my grandma's house in Brooklyn. They couldn't get a cab. The whole thing was like, you know, I was in school. Nobody could get in touch. You probably understand too. Nobody could call anybody. It was like it was mayhem. Because when I first heard it, you know, living in New York, like you hear that a lot. Like, oh, a plane, maybe it's just a mistake. Something happened, was an accident. You don't think that.
Are parents both alive?
Both alive. Yes. Still married and everything. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But certain things they don't talk about.
We don't talk about any feelings or emotions or anything in this house at all. My dad just doesn't know how to handle it. He was raised that way. Like, you push everything under the rug.
Right.
And my mom gets like, you're putting too much stress on me. I can't handle it. Please stop. I don't know how to help you. And then she gets mad. So I wind up being isolated by myself.
Basically. And your brother's not around.
Right. He doesn't live here. And I have no friends, no boyfriend. I don't have a job right now. I don't drive. So I'm like in this shitstorm of like a life right now.
Couple dogs. You said your parents, and if I'm wrong here, like if I misunderstood, tell me, like they don't do the emotions and the feelings. It's this more like fighting or yelling, but that's emotions and feelings.
I guess the emotions and feelings are more like me and my dad are the same type of person. So we butt heads.
Right.
So I think it's more of the emotions of like, I guess you're right. He'll just give me life advice. Like I was in the streets, like this is street advice and this is what you're going to do. And this is it. Or he's like, I'm going upstairs, go in your room and go, you know, wallow in your pity because you should be stronger than that. Like you're letting shit get to you that shouldn't. And he'll try to give me advice. He'll be like, listen, you know what? Like life's not going to be, you know, good every day. There's going to be problems, but you know what? You gotta man up and like not be so weak. He gives me good advice, but it's like, it comes from a place where it almost sounds like yelling at me advice.
Yeah.
It's chaos, you know? It's like, do this and that, blah, 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 you know? And it's like, All right, Dad. You know, whatever.
Especially Staten Islander.
Yeah. Oh, it's chaos nonstop. Even my dogs, you hear it's chaos nonstop.
Which is interesting. Just if people have like a visual of all the five boroughs, which is essentially a county that make up New York City.
Yeah.
Staten Island is one of them. And you say it's all chaos, but actually if you were to just look at it and be there, it's the least urban.
If you want to sum up Staten Island, people think like when I moved down there, like, oh, you had trees and a backyard and this. I'm like, no, my backyard was a train station. Like it was a train. Like people don't understand. Like Staten Island is not, it's either like really big houses. People have a lot of money on Staten Island, a lot of cash. Very few apartments, very few. It's Staten Italy. I mean, 90% of Staten Island's Italian. I mean, I went to school with everybody who's Italian. I went to Tonville High School. I went to St. John's. So I want to be an attorney because I like to fight.
St. John's is a university, and many of you know this, in Queens. If you were listening earlier and wondering what the nickname of Charlotte is, I will nudge you in that direction. More importantly, you went there to study pre-law because in part you like to fight. And I am going to say, did you finish?
Well, I came down when I came to Charlotte. I took a year off because I had to do out-of-state tuition, which was extremely expensive. So then I went to UNCC and I got my paralegal certificate, thinking of going back to school for an attorney. But I feel like I don't know if I have it in me now. I'm kind of like, I like the paralegal thing. I wanted to try that before I really invest into being an attorney.
Was I right? Or I could have been totally wrong. St. John's in New York? Because there's a St. John's down in Charlotte.
Yeah, no, it was St. John's in Staten Island. It's the sister school of the one in Queens. It's just for like only three topics. It was funeral planning.
This is perfect. You can't make this shit up. So there's three things you can study on the sort of satellite campus of St. John's. The first one again is what?
Funeral planning. Oh, wait, there's four. I'm sorry. Teaching, law, business.
All right. So the other three standard stuff. I just love that the first one you said.
There was a priest like on campus that you could go and do a confession. It was strictly like Catholic, like full blown. You couldn't make it up. Literally, you could not make this up if you tried.
It's called St. John. So yeah, there's going to be at least one priest roaming around.
Yeah, you would think, right?
Yeah. This is kind of a confession though, I think.
Yeah.
It's a sort of kind of confessional. I'm not a priest, by the way.
I didn't think you are, but...
Yeah, no, I don't usually get confused for one. That would have been an interesting career choice. Very, very, would have been a huge change for me. But anyway, I digress. Were you doing the paralegal work, or is that something you may do in the future?
I was doing it for a little bit, and then that's when I started getting sick, and I couldn't keep up with the hours, and it started getting too much. And then I was a criminal defense. And I would see things that would disturb me, and I would it would trigger a lot in me. So I was like, it's a career that I love, but I kind of was like, I would have to do something very like maybe real estate one or some type of paralegal, but I did love doing paralegal.
I have a question I don't think I've ever asked before. I have no idea why it's popped in my mind.
Yeah, sure.
Do you have any childhood friends that you keep in touch with?
Not one. No. I lost them all. Unfortunately, no. And I had a ton of friends up until I moved. They even visited me here and everything. And we just, life happens, you know, people get married, they lost touch. And so that's part of my sad situation I got going on now too. So I lost a lot of them.
What happens after the second hospital stay?
Well, with two and three, like I said, I was okay for a while. Then they put me on a medicine. I was on Wellbutrin. It could be great for some people, but it could be bad for others. I was on Wellbutrin and it sent me into a spiral, like a mixed episode to no ends. Like I literally was going to jump in the lake. Like I live in a lake area. Like I wanted to die. Like I was like, I'm going to go walk into that lake. Like I sat on a bench outside my house and I was walking around my block. My parents were following me in the car. And I was like, I can't do this. I'm done. Like this is it. I'm gone. And I was walking up to the lake, about to go drown myself in the lake. My parents like got me out of the water.
Your parents are following you in the car.
Right. Because I'm walking around the neighborhood because I'm like, I had so much of this energy that I was like walking around the neighborhood. And they're like, please just come home. Come to the hospital. Bring it to the hospital. Well, I just started running to the ends of where the lake starts, and I just jumped in, and it was freezing cold. It was like February. I was like, maybe I'll die of hypothermia, you know, maybe something like that. And they got me from the water. Some other guy had seen that and he came over to help and called the police. So they took me to a psychiatrist's office out of all places, not a hospital, a psychiatrist's office. And the psychiatrist was like, I'm putting an order in that 72-hour holds and I'm writing you in. And if you don't go, we're going to arrest you. So basically, that's how they put me into the, yeah, that's how they handled it. I don't understand why. Maybe the cop didn't know what they were doing, but yeah, that's how they handled it.
The word they used, as best you can recall, is arrest.
Arrest. Basically, they put me in handcuffs. They arrested me because I was going to do harm to them or myself.
Oh, of course. Were you going to do harm to them?
No.
No, I didn't think so. Okay.
I wasn't. I mean, I'm literally 5'1". I mean, 125. What am I going to do? Punch you in the face? Like, I'm not going to do nothing to you. Like,
you do sound kind of tough.
I mean, yeah, I could probably kick your ass, but I'm not going to grab his gun. I wasn't going to grab his gun and start shooting at him.
Is it true, though, if you took a swing or two and your dad would be like, atta girl?
Oh, my dad would have freaking helped me. Father's like, let me take her in the car. Like, I'm not going to take her. I'll take her to the hospital. Why you got to arrest her like that? Like, don't embarrass her. I'm like, you're doing this in front of my mother. I'm like, yeah. My dad's like, let us just take her. We're not going to trick you. And he's like, let us just take her to the freaking thing. You don't need to arrest her to do this. Like, it's so mortifying how they treat. It's insane. It's really insane. So then the cop was like, all right, well, I'll let your parents take you, but good, we're going to check on you later. Yeah. We're going to come to the house and check on you, which I know they do that. And my dad said they did. They came to the house later on. And I was already in the emergency room because they check you and they wait for a bed and then all that. And then that's how I got put into the hospital that third time.
Given what you've shared about your parents thus far, I mean, between the following you, getting you out of the lake, all that happens after that, driving you to the hospital. I mean, obviously, they know you've been in the hospital a couple of times. You're living with them. I mean, they know a lot, but that must have been an interesting.
They never expected that. I don't think it registers to them. I think it's something more denial than anything.
Never talked about it since.
No, never. No. Like, I'll try to talk. I'm like, I told my mother the other day, I said, you know, if my life isn't changed by 40, I'm done. She's like, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. But, you know, if you feel the pain's going to end that way, then what am I going to do? I can't stop you. That's my mother's way of thinking about it. So is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. You know, it's what. And then my dad's like, there's no suicide in this house. I'm not talking about it. And he slams the door and goes in his room. So that's the dynamic of this house.
So you go to the hospital.
It's in Davidson, which is 10 minutes away from my house.
Not banjo. No banjo music.
No, Davidson was like top notch. You had your own shit. I mean, it was top notch.
How was the care?
It was great. It really was. They helped me tremendously. And I've been not in the hospital since then. And it's been 5-7 years now.
And in that time until today, because of what you shared earlier, you're getting new diagnoses sometimes. Today, as we speak, there are 5, but you're not sure about all of them. You're on 5 meds. I know it has to have changed over the year, right? Well, it's just the process.
Oh, I've been on 30 meds, 30 different meds.
Wow.
From the Wellbutrin. I also had seizures. So I broke my face like 3 times, hence the nose job. That's why recently I have the hat on and everything. I look like I went 10 rounds of Mike Tyson because I just had that last week. I don't know if I told you I just had a nose job last week.
You didn't use the word nose job.
I had rhinoplasty. I broke my jaw. I broke my chin from the seizures from the Wellbutrin. You'd be surprised how many people have things that you don't even realize. Like, yeah. First of all, seizures, like, they terrify. I mean, that's terrifying. And I mean, what a way, that's horrible. You know, that's so sad. Like, what a way to go. I mean, there are people that have seizures every single day, literally. And it's horrible, horrible.
I always go back to thinking about something like that. A lot of things where it's like having someone in your home, big difference. If you're trying to do this shit alone, having seizures and you hit your head.
Yes.
That's a huge problem. If someone's around, they could immediately call, you know. So I go also back to all this connection, because it applies to me, and I'm a selfish son of a bitch.
No, that's what happened to me. I understand that 100% but that's what happened to me too. Like, I hit my head on the glass. I hit my head on the concrete floor. And if my parents weren't there, they wouldn't have called 911. Yeah. Who knows how long I would have been there laying on the floor like that. Like you said, but isolation is also something that, God forbid, if, you know.
Just to be clear, you jumping in the lake is the attempt.
Is the attempt, yes.
You said it was pretty good experience in this fancy luxury hotel mental hospital for 8 days. five, six, 7 years ago. You've been taking your meds, or at least you are now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You were looking up recently podcasts with the word suicide in it because you think about it every day.
Yeah, I have suicidal ideation. Yeah, constantly. And a plan, if God forbid, I'm hoping that I don't have to come to that. But yeah, I mean, there would be a plan. I mean, I say it, maybe I'm just saying it because sometimes it feels like a way out, like almost like an option. Like, well, if this doesn't work out, there's always that, you know, kind of thing. I hope I don't have to come to that because I don't want to die. I just want my life to get better and I want the pain to end because I'm not in the best, you know, like I said, circumstances, and I'm not living the life I should be living, I feel, at my age. You know, I see people and, you know, they say never compare, but how can you not? You see people getting married, having kids, and I'm like, you know, sitting here like, you know, why do I deserve to have this and these people don't have? And, you know, it's sometimes it's feels like it's not fair, kind of, you know.
It definitely is not fair.
Not, yeah.
Why 40? Is it just because that's the age, or it's just soon?
40 is the age that if you haven't accomplished what you want to accomplish in life, I know 40 is young. It really is not old. I just feel like I should have accomplished what I should have accomplished by 40, at least, you know, like the family, job, my own place, a car, my house. I feel like I should be having kids, having a family, working, having a husband, having a boyfriend, at least something.
What's the reason why, maybe this sounds a little silly, but what's the reason right now that you're unable to work?
Well, basically, a lot of the reason is it's hard for me to do a full-time job, I'll be honest, because of the stress and everything. You get stuck taking these part-time jobs. Unfortunately, you can't pay bills with part-time jobs.
No.
And as much as you want to, you can't. I've tried to get disability, which is the most, I mean, mental illness. This is my fifth time with an attorney, and we're actually appealing it because the attorney lied under oath. So I actually have appeal going. That's going to take another year. I have to work at this time. So even if I have these part-time jobs, I can't afford an apartment. I can't afford, my brother has a full-time job. He could hardly afford what he has. You know, things are expensive, especially now. You put out applications and you put this out and you put that out, and it's like only so many things you can do.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have roadblocks in a way where I don't drive. And it's not a friendly city where I can like get on a train like New York and just get to the city. Like you have to have like some type of Uber, or you got to have some way to get someplace.
So you have no car or you can't drive?
No, I had a DUI 13 years ago. I'm not going to get into it. But it was a basically small boys town club, and I was set up, put it that way. The car accident happened in two houses down from my house. My next door neighbor was a lieutenant of the police department. I mean, really, I can't get my license back unless I put a breathalyzer on the car. To do that, first of all, you have to pay for the own breathalyzer. You have to pay every month for it. You have to have it on for a year. I got the book thrown at me.
13 years ago, you have a DUI and you still have obstacles driving legally, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, because I can't get my license back. Right.
Man, we are such a punitive fucking country.
I paid my dues, did everything I had to do. I was set up and I had a public defender not knowing, which if I would know, it was a shit show. If you would have seen this, it was a shit show. I had three beers, literally. I got into a car accident. It wasn't even like a drunk. I literally got into a car accident because there was a cat crossing the road on my block. I swerved and I hit a mailbox. So they take me in for DUI. I broke my ankle. The cop who came showed up at the thing. It was her husband. I used to date him. Then 4 hours later, they take me to a place to get a breathalyzer exam. 4 hours later, my levels go up 4 hours later. Now, how does that happen? When they just rub Purell all over the breathalyzer thing, which is 90% alcohol, isn't it? That works in their favor, doesn't it? Right? The judge that was in the courtroom that day should have not. He had a trial against him because he was letting all DUIs go. So everybody in that courtroom had a DUI because he was in trouble. He shouldn't have been on that bench that day because he was getting in trouble for letting people go with all these DUIs. So he should have not been on that bench that day. So, yeah. And the statute of limitations run out. I can't fight that. So that's my options. And I drive my parents' car. My parents are not putting a breathalyzer on their car. Why should they? They shouldn't have to do that. I can't buy a car because I need a breathalyzer. How am I going to do all this?
Oh, Jesus. So basically these days, what do you do with your time?
Literally, when I tell you, you're going to be like, this girl, I don't know how she's still alive. I exercise every day, which I try to do. That's part of, I feel like that's part of my prescription. It's very good. It's very, very good. And I literally just watch TV, go to bed, do the same thing the next day, and that's it. Go to doctor's appointments, and that's my life right now. If I did a disability or something, I'd want to go back to school. You know, I'm looking for jobs right now. Boyfriend, as far as that goes, I feel like I have nothing to offer as of right now. So, like, okay, what do I do with that? Friends are hard to make, you know.
Very, yeah.
Especially at a certain age, you know.
Yep. How many people know we're talking?
Just my mom.
Your mom knows.
She knows. She wants to listen. I'm like, Mom, you sure you really want to listen to this? She's like, yeah, I do, actually.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I, for some reason, wasn't expecting that. All right.
Yeah.
How many people do you have in your life to talk to about things that might even include suicide or thinking about it?
Nobody.
Nobody. Not even your doctor?
My psychiatrist only gives pills. She doesn't. She'll give me advice because she's a sweet woman, but she doesn't. That's not her field, you know? And psychologists, they're like booked out forever. And each appointment's like $250, $300. I don't have that type. And you got to go once a week. So they should have like groups like AA Anonymous. They should have groups for, I try to look for groups too. You got to pay for the groups, which I did. And the groups were like printing me Google handouts. I'm like, this is not what I'm looking for. Like, I want people to be in the same situation that I can, we have something in common with, like have a sponsor maybe, or have someone to talk to. Just a text buddy, somebody, you know?
Have you thought about killing yourself today?
No, not today. That's been looking up, so.
Is it? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought about it, come to think about it.
Wait. You said earlier that you think about it every day.
I do think about it every day, but this past week, I mean, I guess I've been so into my nose that I haven't really thought about it. You know what I mean? So I think I've just been so distracted by the rhinoplasty. That actually helped me a little bit because it took my mind off my mental state.
Were you able to say like, look, I know I need this because I fell, but I'd kind of like my nose to look like this.
You know what it was? It was like, you go to an ear, nose, and throat therapist. You know how like old school used to say, oh, I have a deviated septum.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted nose jobs since I was like 16, but I really did break my nose like 3 times, you know? I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor and I told her, I said, you know, my nose, I can't breathe out of it. And I said, I also don't really like to shape too much this or that. And she's like, okay. She's like, well, this is not cosmetic.
Right. But
I'll put you down as having that done. She's like, we're going to put into Medicaid because I just got Medicaid. Because North Carolina put in the state that people could get Medicaid now. She put in, they approved it, and I got it done within 2 weeks. And then, of course, you know, it's been a week. So, of course, I'm not happy with the results yet because I still look like I'm, you know, black eyes and all over. It says it takes 2 to 4 months to heal. So that was kind of exciting for me. So I was like a little excitement.
Yeah. Something's going on. How many people other than the people you've mentioned know about that attempt at the lake?
Just my parents and my doctor.
So you don't talk about it?
I don't talk about it. No. I would be open to it. Like if a hospital was like, would you want to share your attempt or whatever? I would go and volunteer and talk to people. And I would definitely do something like that. People could really like learn a lot about it. You know, I think it should be talked about a lot more. It really should. You know, it's one of those things that it's taboo and, you know, a lot of people's religion too. I'm Roman Catholic, so it's a mortal sin. A lot of people believe that. I mean, there's a lot of people that think or people just weak or selfish to me, that drives me nuts. It's the opposite of selfish. I mean, that's so wrong when people say that, you know. I don't agree with that one.
Do you ever think back to the lake and think, God, I wish that had worked?
Yeah, some days.
You're Roman Catholic?
I am. We used to go to church constantly. We stopped doing that so much, but I do pray the rosary because I feel like that helps. And I do believe in a higher spirit, but I don't go to church like normally or confession. When I first got in the hospital, my father went to talk to a priest and they're like, oh, she'll get over it. They didn't really do much consoling or anything. So my dad's like, I don't really, after the whole, you know, thing with the church, he's like, I'm a little bit, you know.
I guess one of the reasons I asked that was if you take your life, actually, or just die, maybe it's another way, but particularly if you take your life, are you going to hell?
I believe it. I do. I think I believe that.
So you will be in
like
hell.
God gave you a life and like you took it away from yourself. Kind of thing. I also feel that if there's a God, why would he put people through so much pain? To look at it that way too. You know, I'm into religion, but I'm not a diehard religious, you know.
When is your birthday?
October 6th.
March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. I believe 9 months away.
Yes.
If it doesn't get better by 40, 9 months away.
Yeah.
You are how likely to end your life?
God, if things don't change, I'm going at a 6 right now. They say there's you're one decision away from the rest of your life changing. I could meet someone next week and, you know, by October, my birthday, I could be moving into a house. And I mean, you know, you'd have to come back and talk to me probably in September and September, I would really know.
Couple more questions. Does anything help other than exercise and your dogs?
Reading helps a lot. Reading, okay. Journaling. I think journaling helps a lot to get your feelings out. Even little things like sitting in the sun, cuddling with my dogs, you know, stuff like that helps a lot. You know, it really does.
What kind of dogs?
One's a toy poodle who's got the biggest mouth on earth, and one's a Havapoo. That's Louie and Max.
It's Staten Island. Okay. Louie and Max. Of course it's Louie and Max.
Yeah.
So any myths or misconceptions you'd like to dispel?
Like I said, the misconception is just the stereotypical, the way people think that a person should look if they're suicidal. Oh. Like they should look or feel a certain way, have a certain attitude. Like you see these ones on TV that are angry at the world and are wearing all these black clothes and are sitting and drawing, you know, it doesn't have a look. Like I love to wear makeup and, you know, my Louis Vuitton and this and that. And I go to work and I can have friends and this and that. It doesn't mean I'm not going to come home and want to commit suicide every night. You know, that's a myth that I think a lot of people don't realize. Like the person who's working in a job that you would absolutely love or a marriage you would love, you don't know this situation.
No.
They could be looking, smiling on the outside. On the inside, they want to die. They're in pain. That's a big misconception, you know?
Yeah, big, 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 big. And also, just side note, when I put on makeup and wear my Louis Vuitton, I actually feel pretty much better often, but like that's not what this podcast is about. All right, final question I have, and then of course you can add anything you want. It's the pink and purple pill question.
Okay.
Do you know what that one is?
No, I haven't heard that
one. Okay, great. Not great, but so I give you a pill. You can hold on to it. You could flush it down the toilet, or you could take it. And what this pill does, one, it will kill you. You will be in zero pain, none. And everyone, they'll think it's just an unfortunate natural death. Will you take the pill, or would you save the pill, or would you get rid of the pill?
I wouldn't take it that day, but would I save it? Absolutely. Yes, definitely save it.
So your 40th birthday?
For my 40th birthday, yeah.
Having such clarity about it, does that scare you?
Yeah, it does. It does. It really does scare me because I don't want to technically die. I don't. I just want my situation to change. And yep. I feel like if it doesn't, and I've tried all I can do, there's no other way out. That's my only other option. It hasn't changed in such a long time that I don't want to keep back and forth my whole life, back and forth. Still sitting here, or 60, still sitting here saying, well, I should, you know, I'll try to dig myself out of a hole. And I feel like there's more shit piled on top where I'm like, what do you want me to do at this point? You know? And everyone's always like, oh, there's always ways you can do this. There's always ways you can do that. But sometimes there literally isn't.
You're preaching to the choir, and not necessarily a Catholic one, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I just figured out something. Literally, digging yourself out of a hole doesn't work. That's the whole point of saying the expression, right? You wouldn't dig yourself. You would dig a hole. You wouldn't dig yourself out of a hole. You would do the opposite.
How would you dig yourself?
How would you dig yourself literally out of a hole? Now, maybe you could go like traverse it, but I feel like then the earth would just...
You know what? You're right.
We just debunked something really big here today.
Because that's a big expression, like dig yourself out of a hole. But like,
yes.
Yeah, you really can't. You really can't dig yourself out of a hole.
You're literally asking somebody to do something that's not possible. Not like 99%.
You know what? That just made me think of something like that. Like, you can't dig yourself out of a hole. So how do you expect me to kind of do it? Wow. Okay. How do you expect me to dig myself out of a hole if it's physically impossible?
It's like not possible. And if we're using Kristen as an example, like, she's not saying she can't dig with the shovel. She's physically capable of doing that. We're saying Kristen is doing what you're telling her to do. She's digging into the hole because she's listening to what you're saying, and the hole just gets deeper by definition.
You know what? That should not even be a phrase that's used anymore. I'm not using that anymore. That was life changing for me right now.
Glad I could offer something with such an effect.
So now I'm not using that anymore.
Now I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about other expressions people use. And if they don't make any sense, pull yourself up by your boot. What, first of all, what's a bootstrap?
A strap that's on your boot, like laces, right?
All right, laces. Now, I don't know if the laces are untied or tied. No matter what you do with the straps and or laces, how would you pull yourself up? All you would be doing is pulling your boots tighter. How are you going up? I'm imagining someone, if they're pulling their bootstraps really hard, they might break, number one, but then also, and it might hurt their feet or their ankles. And then they would just fall over. So I think we just debunked another one.
It's another saying that makes zero sense.
I also think we should do this on every episode.
We really should, because we could debunk so many things. I mean, we could be in the Guinness World Record for like debunking things.
If you think of any, will you message me?
Oh, absolutely. Because you know what? That is so interesting. Because there are so many phrases that people say, and I'm like, I never really thought about that. If I hear that, I'll be like, wait a minute. Yeah. Me and Sean were talking and I have to tell you something.
Please. Please.
I've got to think of, you know what? I'm going to think of more because my dad has a bunch of them. Yeah, he's got a bunch of them. I got to ask him about those.
I want to be there. I can't be, of course. More like fly on the wall. When the day comes, if the day ever comes where your dad says either of those two expressions we were just examining.
I am literally going to, like the minute I get off this call, like I'm going to go call my dad and be like, listen, we need to talk about something because I was having a discussion and we...
Please tell me what he says. So when the podcast comes out, are you going to listen?
Absolutely. I don't want to hear my voice without cringe. Yeah, I'd better listen. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dad?
No, dad. No, not on that one.
Mom, yes. Dad, no. Brother?
He could listen. I'll give him the link. Yeah, he can listen. Absolutely. I don't want to share too much. You know what I mean? Put too much up because I don't trust too many people with that. People sometimes they could use stuff against you. I'm not very trusting of people with that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds like you trust me. At least I hope.
That's why I wanted to come on the podcast because I think it's great what you do. I think it's really, really good what you do. I think it helps a lot of people. And I think it's great you take the time to really do this. I really do. Really, you're doing a really great job. I do.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. And I thank you for joining me and having the...
Yeah, I had fun. Absolutely.
The word. Let's see. What would be like a Staten Island word? Courage is the word I was going to say. Chutzpah. What would we say in Staten Island?
Like if something's really good or whatever, I would be like, that's mint.
That's so old. I don't mean that. I mean more like you have a lot of, there's a word about the fact that you were willing to talk about it and you talked about it.
You got a lot of balls. You got
all right. A lot of women are going to be annoyed at that one, but too bad.
No, I'm trying to think like, I'm not Jewish at all, but they would say like, you got a lot of chutzpah. For me, it'd be like, you got a lot of balls.
Do you want to add anything else or talk about anything else before we get back to our lives?
Oh, my wonderful life. No, I mean, everything is... That's it. I mean, I think we had a good podcast. I had a lot of fun. Asked all the right questions and you don't have to take anything out. I mean, everybody can hear and hopefully I get to touch on people. They could learn some things and
I hope so.
You know, not feel so alone.
Definitely will happen. Often I do this thing when I'm talking to people where they'll say something. I'm like, oh my God, if you ever write a memoir, that would be a good title. In my mind. But in your case, I want to ask you what your memoir title might be, if you should ever write one.
I was going to write a memoir. The life that shouldn't have been.
Shouldn't have been.
Shouldn't have been. I don't know if that makes sense, but I feel like the life that shouldn't have been.
Doesn't need to make sense to me. It needs to make sense to the publishers. So if you're out there, she'll gladly accept $100,000 from your publishing company to write her memoir before her 40th birthday. Can we agree to that?
Yes, we could.
That's a lot of fucking work in 9 months, but I think you can do it.
It's a lot. I could do it. You know what? I got the time. So let's.
I don't know any publishers, unfortunately, but.
No, yeah, me neither.
You know what I mean?
Me neither, but.
We try.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Thanks again. I really appreciate it, Kristen.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
And yeah, I hope your day's decent, at least decent.
Yeah, thank you. Yours too.
Thanks. All right.
All right. Bye, Sean.
Bye. See you later. As always, thanks so much for listening and all of your support. Special thanks to Kristen in North Carolina. Thanks, Kristen. If you are a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. Hello at suicidenoted.com on Facebook or Twitter /X at Suicide Noted. Yeah, we're still hanging around X for a little while longer. We'll see where that goes. And of course, you can learn more about the podcast, including our membership, in the show notes. And that is all for episode number 204. Stay strong. Do the best you can. I will talk to you soon.